Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
And happy Tuesday to you. It's Jacob Albrecht, Brandon Zinner in for Tommy today, ready to rock and roll on this Tuesday. On the day after a Monday Night Football doubleheader, we still wait anxiously for any news with Patrick Mahomes and that ankle. Good news for us, we'll have our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, joins. We'll see what he's hearing, what he thinks the strategy may be there in Chiefs camp to handle this situation. That's a big part of today's show. We got some college basketball for you tonight as well. You've got two games. Wichita State playing at 5:30. You've got K-State playing at 7. We'll get a preview of both of those games coming up throughout the show today. All kinds of fun stuff in store for you. Maybe a look ahead at some college football playoff games as well. Brandon, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jacob. I did not wake up to my coach telling me that I have to find a way to play better. We have to find a way to get better at quarterback. Unfortunately for Kirk Cousins, I think there's many people having a better morning than him.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. They got the win. The Falcons did. I know you have no love lost for Kirk Cousins as a Vikings fan who won last night, even though they didn't, quite honestly, look like overly dominant, but they were dominant, you know, and that's kind of what they've been doing. So we'll get into that a little bit. We've got the IHOP hotline open for you. It is brought to you by IHOP, the official breakfast partner of Xbox. Come in and try out our decadent, fully loaded French toast only at IHOP. We're going to give you some HTO a little later in the show, so stay tuned for your opportunity to win there as well. Before we get into the Chiefs and what they need to do, let's look back at Monday Night Football. Two games last night. Which we've said this before, I'm a huge fan of the two-game Monday Night Football setup, Brandon. I don't know how you feel about that, but I love it. You had one dominant performance. You know, the Vikings kind of did what they do and smothered and suffocated and did all of these things, and all of a sudden they're 12-2. And I think people are beginning to talk about them now more so than they maybe have been for the last few weeks. And then the Falcons, who stay in the mix, almost blow it against the Raiders of all teams, the Desmond Ridder Raiders. But they get it done. Kirk Cousins looks not good again. They are sputtering along here to try and make this thing happen. But a couple of games last night in a doubleheader, hey, we'll take it. NFL football two times on a Monday? Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's hard, as you alluded to. I am a Vikings fan, so it is hard watching two games at once when you are emotionally invested into one much more than the other. But, I mean, in the case of the Minnesota Vikings, you're never going to complain about getting a divisional win, nonetheless a divisional win by 18 points. So I think if you're the Vikings, you're still – yeah, it wasn't perfect, but you're going to wake up feeling happy today. As for the Falcons, I mean, this just does not look like a playoff team. The way that they sputtered, it looked like they were going to blow it at the end. Desmond Ridder had two chances at the end zone to throw a touchdown. They have a Kirk Cousins problem. He did not attempt a first down pass last night. That's not – I don't care if you do have a Bijan Robinson or a Derrick Henry, or you have both of them on your team. That's not a winning recipe. And if this is going to be a team that's going to compete to try to overtake the Bucs to get to the playoffs, I mean, they have to figure out something, and they have to do it fast.
It's strange with him because there was a point in the season where he was playing well. You know, he went through weeks. It was the Cowboys game, and then he went on a heater for a month and a half, probably, where he was really good. And it's just like lately has been, he was good last week, you know, or sorry. I'm backwards there. He went through this stretch at the beginning of the season. I'm just looking at his logs here. You could say he had two, maybe three bad games through his first 10, probably. And then it's just all totally unraveled on him. Even last week, you know, when he had 340 yards against the Vikings, no touchdowns, 8 interceptions. And then he had last night, that was going into last night, in his 4 games, all of which they lost. It's just, I don't know if he's hurt, Brandon. Like I know you don't have love lost for Kirk Cousins, but that's as bad as we've seen him look ever. Like, we've never really seen him look like this.
Yeah. And you gotta still have to tip your cap off. He's an excellent quarterback. My gripes with him as a Vikings fan go beyond just his ability to throw a football. Now, yeah, when you look at his last 5 games, 9 interceptions to just one touchdown. No, you heard that right. Not 9 touchdowns, 1 pick. 9 interceptions, 1 touchdown. And these aren't juggernauts they're going to play against.
No.
The Saints, the Broncos, who are a playoff team, but they're not a top 5 team. You got the Chargers, Vikings, and the Raiders, who, I mean, they got to him 3 times last night. He only threw 17 pass attempts, which tells you where did they feel this Falcons offense was. And their lone touchdown of the night came through the air to Drake London on the opening drive. So, yeah, in all those games as well, under 70% passing, which that's not Kirk Cousins football. So
right.
If the Falcons are going to get something turned around, it's got to start with Raheem Morris. They got to get something figured out because at the end of the day, it's not all on Kirk Cousins to get that together.
Something's wrong. I mean, they've got good weapons there. Like that offense not working all of a sudden just doesn't make a lot of sense. And they have time, and they're still in the mix. But the Vikings are the story, I think, of last night. Now at 12-2. Now look, we've seen the Vikings have good records. We've seen the Vikings be good in the regular season. You know that better than anybody, and they haven't been able to get it done. Sam Darnold was not great last night, but he wasn't bad. He was fine. I think for me, it's their ability to run the ball again that's made the biggest difference. You watch them closer than I do, but when they're two-dimensional that way, they're a far more dangerous team. Like I watched last night and just thought, you know, a lot of the same things we've liked about the Chiefs historically, this team can do, right? At least in the last couple of years, they play good defense. They can run the ball when they need to run the ball. But now it's almost they're leaning into that a little bit. Aaron Jones has found his legs again. Oh, and by the way, they have this insanely talented pass catching group. They have everything you want right now. And with the Lions hobbled by injury, and you know, it is what it is, and they'll play each other. I think about like the Eagles. I think about the Vikings. Think about the Lions, and I'm not convinced that any of those three teams are significantly better than the other. I think the Vikings are right there with them because when they can run the ball, they're good at everything, right? They don't have that deficiency now. They can do anything they need to do in an individual game. They can go win a game like they did last night without Sam Darnold slinging it all over the field. And it's Sam Darnold, so that's not a bad thing, right? To be able to not have to make him throw it 50 times.
Oh, no, absolutely. And with Aaron Jones, it comes back. He was battling a rib and a hip injury around the middle portion of the season, and he just looked like he had some extra juice last night. They were able to just move the ball. They were 7-14 on third down. They held Chicago. They didn't have a third down conversion in the first half. So, which when you talk about the defense, they were able to make Caleb Williams miserable. A clip going viral throughout last night and this morning of Caleb Williams over on the bench, hunched over, just looking like he was in so much pain, just looking like he wasn't mentally strong last night. And that's probably a whole nother conversation. But yeah, just in the case of the Vikings, they have all the recipe. The recipe is there for this to be a team that can go rush the passer. They can beat you downfield with Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson, Justin Jefferson. They can run the ball with Aaron Jones. But will it all come together at the right time? That's always been the gripe with the Vikings. Something's not clicking. It's clicking at least right now. But they have three tough games coming up. And you mentioned the three top dogs. I would throw. I think the Packers still have a chance to, as well as anybody, to possibly represent the NFC. It's gonna be wild. Just the race for the North and as well as the NFC's top seed. And there's three teams very much still alive.
It'll be good. One more from Monday Night Football, and then we'll take a break and come back and talk Chiefs. You mentioned Caleb Williams. I saw Caleb Williams doing things last night that tell me he's going to be awesome. Like, he can make throws from positions that most guys just can't make. His escapability in the pocket, now he had to escape too much, which was the problem, right? Like, his line play wasn't very good. But his ability to feel it, move around, avoid it, and make some pretty wild throws, I think he's going to be very good. I think he looks like he's going to be awesome. Now, the mental, you know, can he hold strong through a tough first season? I don't know. I assume that he can. I think that he can. But you get him some proper coaching. Like, I think he's got a chance to be really, really, really good.
Did you see Bears and proper coaching?
I know. I mean,
Chicago Bears football.
Like, if they can figure out a way to do, like, for instance, what Harbaugh's been able to do with the Chargers and just sort of, like, get some regular stuff going in there. Look at what happened. Justin Herbert is, like, refound himself. I would tell you that all the jobs that are going to be open in the offseason, that would be the job I would take if I was a coach. With the roster that they have and him in place and another high draft pick impending, that would be the roster that I would want if I was if I'm Ben Johnson, for instance, and I can have my pick of the jobs, that's the one I'm taking.
Regular and Chicago Bears football, unfortunately, do not go together. And they had a chance to go get Jim Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh and Kevin Warren, unfortunately, don't really get along too well. So that was never going to be a marriage that came to fruition.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the latest on the Chiefs. What do we think they need to be doing here? What should they be doing? We know it's a high ankle sprain. Now, we'll get Dan Israel's take on it, too, in hour number two, and we'll get you ready for some college basketball tonight. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here. Always got us a big old, I call it a tank of coffee in the lobby there at all the Odyssey studios. So we appreciate them. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, and of course on 12 News Connected. It's Jacob Albrecht, it's Brandon Zinner, Chad Chambers producing. We'll be right back. Again, everybody, it is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be here with you live on this Tuesday morning. Jacob Albrock, Brandon Zinner with you here. Brandon in for Tommy. Glad to be here with you, having some fun. I don't know what's going on out there in the universe. I've lost power twice. Thankfully, the timing there, Brandon, was good. It was during the break, and we got fired back up right before we came on the air here. So if you think I'm just in awe of what Brandon had to say and speechless, There's a chance that we lose power again, and I'll just call in if that happens. I don't know what is happening outside, but something crazy is. All right, Brandon, you're in the chair here. You get to make the call. You're Andy Reid. Let's call Patrick Mahomes 70%. He's 70% right now, not 100%, but able to play to some degree. What call are you making with all this?
Well, if Mahomes tells me he is good to play, wants to play, just based on the track record that this organization has, especially like this regime, he's going to play. They've never been one to really hold guys back, it doesn't seem like. But if the decision was mine, I think that this is a team, welcoming in a team in the Texans, that with the right game plan can still beat the Texans with Carson Wentz under center. And this is a season where the one seed is very, very important. So you have to play a balancing act. But if I'm in charge, I'm saying, hey, Patrick, we need you for the first round of the playoffs. And that's more important than trying to win this game on Saturday. They have two games ahead. Whether they lose this game or not in the grand scheme of things doesn't matter, because they have to win just two of them. So I say the right thing to do is to let Carson Wentz steer the ship, because if things get worse for Patrick Mahomes, unfortunately, then everything you've done to this point in the season, just it might be a wash.
So it really, to me, there's one big key. Can the Chiefs beat the Texans with Carson Wentz? I think that they can. Now, we know that Vegas doesn't think Mahomes is going to play and that the Chiefs are underdogs at home. I think the Chiefs can beat the Texans with Wentz. And so there's two camps here. A, it's really, does Mahomes think he can play, and is there any risk to aggravation or anything like that? He's Gumby. We know that high ankle sprain for him probably is different than most. I'm willing to concede that, because we have such a long history of it. But then you have a short week to Pittsburgh. If you're stacking up the games that the Chiefs need to play here, the Texans game is the least important. They need two wins of the three, right? The Pittsburgh game is the most important of the three, because technically speaking, they're still in the mix to pass you in the pecking order of the playoffs. Houston is not. And so I'm more worried about Pittsburgh than Houston for that reason alone. And the other thing is Denver is good, but Denver's beatable. So, if I'm power ranking these, I would say, I think, if George Pickens plays, Pittsburgh is the best of these three teams. If he does not play, Houston is the best of these three teams. And no matter how you slice it, Denver's probably the third best. Maybe I'm not giving Denver enough credit, but I think you get what I'm saying. And if you take two of three, you also get a bye week for rest. So I think it makes the most sense to take your chances with Wentz against the Texans. Now, the other side of that is, if you think Mahomes can give you enough and you beat the Texans with Mahomes, and then you turn around and beat Pittsburgh and you clinch it, now you've got 2 weeks off for Mahomes to rest the ankle if you need it. So I get both sides of it, and it really does. I think you're right. It does come down to what Mahomes wants to do, but I don't have an issue if the Chiefs want to protect Mahomes against Mahomes. He's got to be able to be, to me, like 100% to be able to do this thing. Like, I don't think you take the risk. Rick says that Pittsburgh could be out if they lose to Baltimore Saturday. I mean, I don't think we can count on that. They beat Baltimore the last time they played them. So I don't think we can count on them losing. If George Pickens plays, this is a really good team. If he doesn't, they're not nearly as good, pretty clearly. So I we can't worry about what else happens. Buffalo could lose a game too, and then all of a sudden it wouldn't matter. So I think it's all really interesting. But I just don't know why they would feel they have to play Mahomes if he's not anything but 100% this weekend. Because I think that resting him is too important. Like, you can't risk a serious injury.
Yeah, and especially like we talked about, you have to look at the grand scheme of things. Looking down the road, a game that he's playing in the third week of January is always going to trump what he's doing here the last week of December. And if it just so happens where you do sit him and you end up going on the road, You'd rather go on the road with Patrick Mahomes and go on the road with Carson Wentz at the end of the day.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's going to be a tough call for them. Luckily, we'll probably get some more from Dan, but all the reports are saying that Marquise Hollywood Brown is going to come back this week, which is another weapon there
for Carson Wentz.
Right,
that's a good way to put it. If you're stacking up the three games right now, which one of those does Carson Wentz have the best chance to win? And even though the Texans are potentially the best of those three teams, it's at home. You could be getting Hollywood Brown back. Yeah, I think that's as good a chance as any. And if he doesn't, now you still control your own destiny, and you know you just got to go win the last two games.
Yeah, and if Carson Wentz is the one that lines up this weekend, it shouldn't all be on Carson Wentz, because you have two running backs have not been utilized the last month. They should be healthy. Isaiah Pacheco was showing some pop. Kareem Hunt looked rejuvenated, refreshed early in that game. We talked about it yesterday that they just decided not to run the ball when Patrick Mahomes was clearly being pressured in that second half. And is that going to be the tipping point for this coaching staff? I really doubt it, but it very well may be. They might go back to the analytics and say, we did not run the ball when we needed to that second half. We need to do that against the Texans at home.
They ran it more in totality. I don't think they're going to, if they play Carson Wentz, I don't think they're going to line Carson Wentz up and let him throw it 47 times. They did run it more this week, finally, like a lot more, you know, but to the running backs, what we've been begging for. But when push came to shove and they had to make some tough decisions, they reverted back. And that is a problem. And this is why we've been screaming this from the rooftops for a month, 2 months, is they're going to get Mahomes hurt. I mean, look at the play that he got hurt on. That's just like, that's straight pressure, you know, like it's. And I get it, right? Like, you think that Mahomes gives you the chance, it's a big play, and I'm not saying that particular play, obviously, on fourth down they should have, but every time he drops back with this offensive line is a risk, and they had the game in control, and they could have just kept running the ball. We'll get to their defense, too. We'll do it in hour number two. I want to ask you about their defense, because I did think they looked significantly better in that game than they have. But let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get you a look ahead on college basketball tonight. So keep it with us here. We're going to look ahead to K-State's game tonight, to Wichita State's game tonight. One of those games should be a really, really tough test. So that'll be an interesting one. Brandon's got actually a connection to the opposition, so can probably bring you insight you won't find anywhere else. We'll tell you why that is as we make our way through it here. Want to tell you about Crestview Country Club. We appreciate their support of the program here. All kinds of holiday things happening there. Member appreciation this week. You've got the holiday parties coming up. You got a great restaurant there, and I'm just looking here. The chef special this week, something pork medallions in a mushroom wine sauce. How about that? All kinds of good stuff there, Crestview. We appreciate their support of the program. Keep it right here. We're coming back. College Hoops Talk next on Sports Daily. Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you here on a Tuesday. Jake Ballbrock, Brandon Zinner in for Tommy. Jad Chambers producing, rocking and rolling our way through. Dan Israel, Chiefs Radio Network, joins us top of the next hour. Until then, let's talk a little college hoops. We've got K-State in action tonight. You'll hear them on KFH. We've got Wichita State in action tonight. You'll hear them on KEYN. Glad to be the home of Wildcat and Shocker Athletics here, Brandon. Wichita State plays first, so we'll start with them. 14.5-point favorites over UMKC. Should be no problem. I don't know about the line. I think those are kind of hard to predict right now with Shocker still. But, you know, they're pretty heavy favorites tonight. We did learn last night on the coach's show, which you heard right here on KFH, that Ronnie DeGray probably looks like he'll be back sooner than anticipated. I think it was mid-January, which means he'd miss 2-3 conference games. So that's fantastic news for the Shockers, Brandon. What did Jerome Tang call them yesterday? Looking ahead to them, he called them a tournament, tournament team. I think that's probably about right. Like, I could definitely see a scenario where if they can get DeGray back quickly, that we're looking at their resume late in the year. I think they could fit into that description. But, you know, these kinds of games here, you fall apart in a second half on Saturday. This is one where you come back, you play this team at home. They ought to push them around a little bit, I think.
Yeah, the on the Ronnie DeGray front, that will be great just in the future, because this team has really at times just struggled to rebound the basketball, and that's something Ronnie DeGray does super well. Great defender as well. He just does some intangibles that not every player is going to bring to the floor. As far as tonight, yeah, it's going to be just a good opportunity for them to get back to what they do, and that's going to play defense. That's going to be to get good offensive shots. They really had to get out of their own the last 13 minutes of that game against DePaul. They go on to lose 91-72. It was tied at 60 with 13 minutes left, so that tells you DePaul ends the game on a 31-12 run. And just we were talking about it, just hitting shots that I mean, even if you are playing good defense, it's not gonna help too much. I am curious to see to see how they come back mentally, because yeah, they have a tough game coming up on Saturday. I don't think a Paul Mills team is gonna be looking past this one. No. The games, all of Wichita is definitely excited for, but. Yeah, just want to see the team get back to basics, take care of business, sweat free. But rarely is that the case.
It was so fun. I was watching the second half with my kids and wife, and like we're all watching it. And they were like, "How are they making those shots?" And I'm like, "Guys, it's probably not going to happen for the Shockers today." Like, those are the kinds of games you ought to be able to wash your hands of pretty quickly. And it sucks that it's a 19-point margin, because that will come back to bite them probably, as resumes are being looked at, but that wasn't a 19-point game, and it's just one of those unfortunate things. So, you know, it enhances the pressure to go win some of these others now. So Jad's got some audio here from the Paul Mills Coaches Show last night previewing UMKC. Because listen, I'll be honest, I haven't watched one second of UMKC basketball this year. I got nothing for you on the ruse, but Paul Mills does. Here's what he said about him on his Coaches Show last night.
My last year at Oral Roberts, we were pretty good, and we were able to go through the league undefeated. But there was one game that required a buzzer beater, and this was a home game, and it was against those guys, Kansas City, UMKC then. They've since changed their name, but Marvin has a 100% have those guys ready. We're playing a team tomorrow night that 47% of their shots are going to end up being three, so very similar to DePaul. And we have to make certain guys put the ball on the floor. They have to deck it. And if they're not dribbling, we're doing it wrong. But there has to be a bigger sense of urgency at getting to shooters than what, to be honest with you, than what we've had all year.
There you go. There's the preview. I think, you know, this is naive of me to say, but I'll say it anyway. Like, I think there are games where you should just do what you want to do, not what you need to do with the other team. And I know that's stupid, and coaches would say I'm crazy for saying that. But you know what I mean. Like, the perception should at least be in this game. Shockers should just come in and do what they want to do. Like, they should set the tone. They shouldn't be reacting or reactionary as much to UMKC as they might need to be to some other teams. Impose their will. Because I don't even know what the Shockers' will is still at this point, offensively. We see them score 96. We see them struggle when they can't shoot it. So I don't know what that is, but I'd sure like to see it, and this is a game where you'd like to see it. Like, what is the Shockers' offensive identity, and can they impose it in a game like this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a Justin Hill, Quincy Ballard. I think those are the guys you kind of want to see rise to the top, because I think those are going to be the two guys that you can rely on when the tough games do come around. This is I will revert back. I did a story about another team that I covered at a past market playing Kansas City. I called them UMKC in my story, and I got an email saying, "We are not UMKC. We are Kansas City," and they were not too happy with me. So we will refer to them as the Kansas City Ruse. But three double-digit scorers, and I will give our friend Weston Pletcher a little shout-out for these game notes. Devontae Hall has handed out a team-best 50 assists, but only scores 4.8 points on 28% shooting. So we love that in the game notes from Weston. But, yeah, come out and just impose your will, no sweat, double-digit lead at halftime, and let's start looking forward to Saturday.
Love that Quincy Ballard was able to give him another 30-minute performance in that game. Didn't have any fouls. So he's been able to stay on the floor with the Gray out, which has been really, really good. And right now, Mate Bozniak is not getting the minutes because Ballard's out there. And I think that's correct. You know, like that's the correct thing. And by the way, listeners out there, I'm going to call him UMKC. That's what I'm going to do.
I hope no one from university is listening.
I actually just pulled up their website, which is umkc.edu. Yeah.
That's right.
And the website actually still has the UMKC logo on their own website.
I think it's an athletics thing, personally, but
it's, you know what?
They're the Kangaroos. Again, it's an awesome mascot.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad that they'd like to be called Kansas City.
KCRoos.com.
I don't care. If you'd like people to know who you're talking about, you refer to the team as the thing everybody knows. Nobody knows what Kansas City is. Everybody knows what UMKC is. I make no apologies for that. In the business of being accurate, I shouldn't say things like that, but we're also in the business of people knowing what the hell we're talking about. And so whether it's Kansas City or UMKC out there, the Shockers should do what they want to do against them tonight. Looking forward to that game. Also looking forward to K-State and Drake. K-State, I don't know what to make of K-State. I think there's some real pressure there, Brandon. And I don't even think that's a debate anymore, right? Like there is weird tension. There is some pressure from the fan base building now to an untouchable coach just a year and a half ago. Like it's strange there right now. It doesn't seem like relationships are going well for a relationship-driven coach. And they've got time to turn it around. But my goodness, like we're how far into that? We're almost 10 games into this thing. And it seems like there's a chemistry issue as much as there is like an offensive creation issue, which has been an issue for, you know, this program for a while now. But they are favored over Drake tonight. Wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. That's me. I don't know what to make of K-State because I was real optimistic about them coming into the year. And I it is uneasy. I don't even know how else to describe it. It's just really uneasy with this program right now.
It wouldn't be a thing if there was no history with what we have. So let's rewind a year ago, the Naquan situation, Naquan Tomlin, suspended, eventually dismissed from the team, which involved the president, which involved Jerome Tang, became a huge story. There were protests outside the president's house on campus. And obviously last season did not go the way the Cats wanted to, a very disappointing year, which then leads to late in the season, Jerome Tang, schools looking to bring him in, and he gets a contract extension, gets a pay raise. Fast forward to this year, a brand new team. And now here we are, Chora after less than a dozen games into the season. He has left the team, and then just over the last week, rumors on social media about Doug McDaniel, the point guard coming in from Michigan, and that leads to a press conference yesterday where Jerome Tang feels he needs to even address it. These are just allegedly social media rumors, but I mean, to the point where Jerome Tang said him and Doug McDaniel, they don't have a great relationship. They have a good relationship, but it's when iron meets iron, sparks are going to fly. And that's, if you're a Kansas State basketball fan, that is just absolutely terrifying because you're facing an unbeaten Drake team tonight when it appears your team is at its lowest. And then you got to go on the road and face another 8-win Shockers team. And then you got to turn around and you get a Big 12 opener against Cincinnati. Oh, that's okay. No, Cincinnati's ranked in the top 25 and is 9-1 on the season. This is going to be a trying 2 weeks for Kansas State. And it's going to tell a lot about what this team's goals, how they're going to reach them later in the season. Because, yeah, I don't know if they've reached their lowest, but they certainly could over the next 2 weeks.
So tell us about Drake, Brandon, because you've been on, you know, McCollum, the guy they brought in, your alma mater, right, is where he came from. And we heard Wyatt Thompson mention it yesterday. There was a massive exodus from Drake with DeVries and all of those things over to Indiana State to leave there. But Drake is 9-0 now. So what can you tell us about how they're going to operate?
Yeah, so Ben McCollum, if you're in the basketball world, he has been one of the biggest names in just in coaching searches for the last 5 years. Comes from Northwest Missouri State, my alma mater, but also a school that I covered as a journalist for 6 seasons. I saw it in him back in 2015 when he was on a run of national titles. He ended up winning 4 national titles in a span of 7 years at Northwest Missouri State with a guy that a lot of Kansas State fans know named Trevor Hudgens, who came from Manhattan, went up to Northwest Missouri State, and had a 2-year NBA career, now is balling out overseas. But Ben McCollum goes up, gets this Drake job this offseason for DeVries, who left, brings the roster with him. So Ben McCollum brings 4 of his Division II players, and they have 4 players starting for this Drake team that were playing Division II basketball a year ago at a high level. And how's that working out? They are 9-0. It's going to be it's tough to go against Ben McCollum. They play very sound offense. They rebound the ball so well. They don't take bad shots. You're going to see probably more sets tonight against Kansas State than you might all season. They're going to do a lot of ball screens where it's just going to put the defense in a pickle. Am I switching? Am I sticking to my man? And there's going to be open guys that are going to be able to shoot the 3 for Drake. This is not a fluke 9-0 team. They've beat Miami. They beat Florida Atlantic. They beat Vanderbilt. All of those, none of them at home on neutral courts. They won out Valparaiso. It's a tough test. Ben McCollum is the real deal. I was saying that I thought Wichita State should have went and looked at him whenever they hired Paul Mills. Still think Paul Mills has a great future here. But and this isn't the first job also to be coming
McCollum. I think it speaks to your how highly you think of him to think he was ready to make that sort of jump. It takes him another year, and he ends up making up a little lesser of a jump, but pretty similar to get to Drake. I mean, that's not a nothing program. Drake's been really, really, really good for a long time. And so I think what it tells me is K-State is not, Drake's not going to help K-State tonight, right? K-State's going to have to come out and show that they are the more talented team, and they are the more talented team. But they're, you know, this to me, that what you're describing with, you know, those things and the way he'll coach and the like, that's not good news for K-State.
No.
Right. And that's that concerns me about this game. I don't know where this thing goes for K-State. I really don't. I'm not saying abandon ship or anything like that. I'm just saying I did not see this coming with this team. I thought the pieces fit well. I thought you could wash your hands of last year. They're clearly more talented than they were a year ago, yet here we are, and it just feels like nothing is going right for them. Could they still turn it around? Of course they can. There's just not anything happening that tells us they're approaching that, though, that they're approaching this thing like finding a groove. They have beaten some bad teams, and they've lost to some good teams. What is K-State's best win this year? You know what I mean? Longwood. They have wins over New Orleans, Cleveland State, Mississippi Valley State, George Washington, Longwood, and Arkansas Pine Bluff. They've played 3 teams that you would consider quality opponents, and they've lost all 3 games. They're about to play 2 more teams that you would consider quality opponents before they start conference play. This could unravel on them. Very, very good. They don't have a quality win this year.
And they haven't looked right? good like, against those quality opponents.
Yeah, right. I guess they barely lost to Liberty, if you want to hang your hat on that. But like they have not won a quality game all year long.
Their strength of schedule, we were talking about it yesterday in KenPom, I think is around 330. And the teams that they have beat, when you just go look at the metrics, I mean, those teams rank in the bottom 300 of offense and defense combined. There hasn't been anything promising to take away from this. It would be one thing if you're going, you're blowing out these teams, but I mean, they're playing overtimes. They are playing couple score games. We still don't know if Coleman Hawkins is going to be able to carry this team. If that's even what this team wants to do, I don't know what the identity of this team is. Whether it's one of the Joneses, whether it's Brendan Housen, your favorite player on the planet, I believe.
My favorite player, right. Yeah,
David Gasson or Coleman Hawkins. I don't know what the identity of this team is. Maybe we see it tonight, but it's going to be a tough ask against a Drake team.
It's going to be a tough ask, and I want it to work. I really, 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 really do. I'm very, very, very concerned, though. I got to be honest. This is the perfect game to get it turned around. Perfect game to get it turned around. And look, if you're the Shockers and you get K-State coming up this weekend, they feel gettable, right? They feel gettable. And that's got to be exciting. We got this, you know, we got this double-edged sword here with them going head-to-head. Man, I hate this for K-State, and I really want to see them turn it around. Wichita State, real quick, back to them. We mentioned this yesterday. This was kind of the point where things unraveled on them last year, too. Remember, they got out to that 7-1 start, and I think it went up. Did it go up to 10-1 before things really unraveled, and they only won a handful of games the rest of the way? I think there's I don't think this team feels that, but I think this fan base does to some degree. It would be I really, really hope that they can impose their will and get a big win tonight and just look really good, because I think they could have beat DePaul. And I know that sounds crazy with a 19-point margin, but they were leading at halftime. And DePaul all of a sudden just did those weird things. That game on Saturday, Brandon, is fascinating.
Yeah,
for a lot of reasons.
As much as we talk down on this version of Kansas State, just, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, a win over K-State is going to be top 80 in Ken Pom. It's going to be huge for the program. Things unraveled last year. Loss by double digits at Mizzou. Loss by double digits downtown to South Dakota State. Escaped by Southern Illinois. And then it was bad for a month. Let's hope that this isn't the same Shocker team to do that.
Yeah. Got to get there first, though. They each play games tonight. Again, you'll hear the Shockers right here on KFH. You will hear the Shockers over on KEYN. You'll hear K-State right here on KFH, your home, of course, for Shocker and Wildcat Athletics. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dan Israel hops on for his weekly visit. What to do with Patrick Mahomes, and what is he hearing right now about that ankle? We'll get his insight when we return. It's Jacob Albrock. It's Brandon Zenner on the way out. We'll give away some HTO. You can win a free iced tea, sweet or unsweet. You can win a free iced or hot coffee. One of each right now to either Wichita location or in Derby by texting the keyword T to the short code 20357. That's TEA to 20357. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. We're coming back. Dan Israel joins us next.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two here on Sports Daily. Still getting connected with Dan, so we'll get to Dan just as soon as Jad gives us the thumbs up here. It is Jacob Albrock and Brandon Zenner in the meantime, getting you ready for a big night of college basketball tonight. Getting ready for another crazy week of the NFL season. I was just looking through the playoff picture, and it's almost settled. The NFC is a little trickier, some of the divisional races, but, you know, this Thursday night game between the Chargers and Broncos, pretty massive, Brandon, honestly. Like, if the Chargers beat Denver, okay, if the Chargers beat Denver, you've got Denver facing a situation where they have to then play the Bengals, who would not be eliminated, and the Chiefs. Denver's not out of the woods. Now, the Chargers obviously also face dire straits because they've got to play Denver. If they lose again, they're potentially only a game ahead of a team like Cincinnati or Indianapolis. So it is not quite settled there, but it should be an interesting stretch down here through the home stretch of the regular season. All right, we have Dan Israel in, our Chiefs insider, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, as we bring Dan in to talk about what everybody's talking about, Dan, and that is a right ankle of a certain player and what it means. What have you heard? And if you can, if you could just give us like a gut feel, percentage chance, whatever it is that Mahomes plays, what would you give it right now?
Well, I've heard that it's a mid ankle sprain, which is better than a high ankle sprain.
Okay.
Not as good, as a low, not as good as a low ankle sprain. But you know, he is so tough, Jacob. He refuses to play. I mean, he refuses not to play. And so I think it's going to be hard to keep him out of the game, regardless of whether that's the best health decision for him or not. But especially with the Chiefs still fighting for that first round seed, I think his chances of playing are probably pretty good.
Dan Brandon Zenner here. Thanks for joining us this morning. If in the fact that they do need to go to Carson Wentz, what does this offense look like with him? How much confidence do they have in that he can go in and run the offense that we have become accustomed to seeing throughout this season?
You know, Brandon, in training camp, he looked great. I mean, he really looked like a starting quarterback. It was almost like, why do we have two starting quarterbacks on this team? But when you're behind Patrick Mahomes, I mean, there's not much of a chance there. And there's also a reason that he's a backup quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, right? But I do think he's capable. I do think he understands. You know, he's been in our offense now long enough that if he does have to go, he'll make a good outing, I believe. But I just think it's going to be hard to keep Mahomes down.
I can tell you right now, Vegas thinks that Wentz will play because the Chiefs are home dogs. If you look at those sorts of things, I think it's a really interesting decision. I think if Mahomes is anything less than 100%, it comes down to, can Carson Wentz beat the Texans at home? I think he can. And then at that point, you've got the because the Pittsburgh game, as of right now, means more than the Texans game, right? Because Pittsburgh's technically still alive in the home field race. So that game means more. It would then be on a short week. You would still control your own destiny if Carson Wentz can't go. And I understand the other side of it, too, because if you beat Houston and Pittsburgh, then you could rest Mahomes for 2 weeks. I think it's a pretty fascinating decision for Andy Reid and the coaching staff on whether Mahomes wants to play or not, whether they let him play because they've got 3 games in 11 days coming.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, one of the issues here, first of all, when we talked about this, you know, 3 games in 11 days, man, the worst thing that can happen in that stretch is an injury, right? And that's exactly what happened. But, you know, the way the offensive line was playing, it was kind of a matter of time. But I think one of the factors there is going to be late in the week, just how much swelling remains. And, you know, I think if there's enough swelling in there that they just can't deny it, they'll sit him just because even his own people will tell him, you know, hey, this is, you don't want to mess this ankle up permanently. And so I think that there's some degree of that, but I think if it comes down to just a pain tolerance, there's no way they're keeping him out of there. They'll shoot that ankle up and he'll be out there. And I think it's, man, when you watch the Bills play on Sunday, it's going to be a fight to the end, I think, here. I'm not sure the Bills are going to lose another game, right?
And, Dan, we were already on Mahomes' injury watch just because of the state of this Chiefs offensive line. They make the change after the DJ Humphreys injury. Joe Tooney moves over from left guard to left tackle for the first time since college, which I'm still not sure was even talked about enough nationally, how impressive that was. What did you take away from what we saw from him moving over? And what do you think this team does moving forward with that left tackle position?
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a real problem, right? I mean, I thought Tooney did really well. That is not easy to change positions. I know a lot of people think, hey, the offensive line is the offensive line. But, you know, Tooney's used to going forward, not sideways. And so it's a pretty big leap for him to make. Thought he played great. You know, when you look at Mahomes, came out of the game with an injury, there's always a strike in that direction, right? Nothing you can say about that. May not have been Tooney's fault, but it ultimately the offensive line failed there, and so I still think they have an issue. I think they're going to have to get used to doing a tackle eligible tackle eligible or a you know, bringing in the keeping those tight ends back, man. You got to give Mahomes more time. I thought his time went from about just under 2 seconds to just under 2.5 seconds, which is a big deal in the NFL. But they need to I'd like to see that get up to three. That'd be much better.
So that's another good point, because as we talk about what to do with Mahomes, if TJ Watt is out, and he could be by the time the Chiefs play them, there's another reason for me. Like, Houston can rush. Houston can get after it and rush the passer. So can Denver. If I'm like crystal balling the perfect scenario here, it's that you can beat Houston with Carson Wentz, and then if you don't, maybe you have to get Mahomes in there against a Watt-less Pittsburgh pass rush, and then who knows what you'll need against Denver at that point. It's always been a protecting Mahomes thing, even before the injury to me. It's why I thought they needed to run the ball more. It's why all of these things are for this reason right here. I mean, I don't know. A mid-ankle sprain feels like it can get worse, right? It's not like he can just run out there and have no further injury risk. That feels like something that can get worse.
Definitely, and I think, you know, even though they can tape a mid-ankle sprain much better than a high ankle sprain, you're still putting the guy out there. And I mean, I think a perfect plan, if you ask me, would be to start Wentz. I mean, there's nothing keeping you. As long as you don't make Mahomes inactive, you could always bring him in the second half if the Chiefs need it. I don't know if they'll do that. I don't know. I know the optics of that may not be that pretty, but I'm with you. I believe they could beat the Texans with Wentz. Look, Wentz looks so good in training camp. I mean, he looked like a true starting quarterback. I'm not sure I would say they couldn't beat the Steelers with Wentz, but I just know, you know, how competitive Mahomes is, and it just seems like when the better part of valor would be to say, hey, rest now. You may even get to rest. Who knows? You may even get to rest on Christmas Day. That would be ideal, right? And then you can rest maybe against the Broncos. But, you know, it just – with the there would have to be a huge upset with the Bills for all of that to happen. And I just think, like, they want to keep the gas on and make sure that they get this first seed.
Yeah, the Bills finishing up three divisional games, two against the Patriots, one against the Jets. Those first two games against each of those opponents at home. And, Dan, regardless of who is playing under center, it sounds like Hollywood Brown has a very good chance of returning, which is going to be a huge help to whoever it is under center. What are you hearing about his chances to play this week? What do you think he'll bring to this offense? Because we did only get to see that for Check's Notes, one snap of the preseason.
Yeah, you know, Brandon, it's funny. He did a little bit of practicing last week, and it was like he didn't even miss a beat. Mahomes and him were still in sync, and I'm excited. I mean, the aspect of that is so unfortunate, this injury, because I really think that it would have been fun to see and for them, those guys, to get a few weeks under their belt before they hit this playoff run. But from all accounts, he's not missing a beat. He should be out there. How much they'll actually use him, especially if Wentz starts, I think you'll see him get some snaps. I mean, it's kind of like when they brought in Hopkins. You know, they were slow at it. They didn't exactly throw him into the mix, but they kind of slowly gave him a play here, a play there. I think they'll do the same with Hollywood Brown.
Is the Clyde Edwards-Helaire move yesterday, you think, the big reason why Hollywood is activated and ready to go for this game? Are we reading between the lines too much on that?
No, I think that you're exactly right, Jacob. I'm frankly shocked that it's taken this long, to be honest with you, because there just doesn't seem to be much that Clyde Edwards-Helaire can bring to the table at this point, right? I mean, especially Samaje Perine seems to be playing better every week, and we've still got Carson Steele in our pocket. So, yeah, I think so. I think you just, you know, there's only so many roster spots, right?
And as I alluded to, the Bills, they have the upper hand when you look at the schedule. If Mahomes is healthy, this is already a tough schedule for the Chiefs. When you look at the Texans, you look at the Steelers, and then a road trip to Denver in Week 18. They could be playing for the 6th seed or the 7th seed, which is going to maybe depend whether you're going to Buffalo or you're going to Pittsburgh, possibly, in the playoffs. How do you think this all plays out? Where are we seeing the AFC shake up once we enter the playoffs in less than 1 month's time?
Yeah, it's funny. It shows the parity of the league, right? I mean, you could end up being 15-2 and the 6th seed or whatever it is. It's just, it's nuts. But And you got to assume the Bills are just going to win all three of those games, right? I mean, man, the way they looked against the Lions where they could just score at will certainly makes you think they're going to score at will against the Patriots and against the Jets. I know the Jets had a good outing Sunday, but still, I just don't feel like that's going to be much competition for them. So the Chiefs really, they're in the driver's seat, but there's just no margin of error when you talk about finishing the season against what are three very competitive opponents. I think, you know, the Broncos are playing much, much better. Even though they had a down week Sunday, I feel like that defense is for real. Steelers, I don't know what to think about other than they're a good team. They're always competitive. They're always in the fight. They remind me of the Chiefs in that they find ways to win. Tough game against the Eagles, of course, Sunday for them, but I think they'll be ready on Christmas Day. You know, the winner in all of this, guys, Netflix.
Oh, yeah. They won. The Steelers have a George Pickens problem. When he's not out there, they're different. But, man, when he's out there, they're good. I want to ask you about the rest of the – so the Chargers and the Broncos will play, and that's a fascinating game to me because I don't know that either of these teams is completely safe. The Chargers had a major letdown. They're actually favored in that game. Okay, so the Chargers are favored. Let's just say the Chargers beat the Broncos. Then the Broncos got to turn around and play the Bengals, who are not eliminated yet. And then the Broncos have to finish with the Chiefs. Who would you which situation would you rather have? Because the Broncos are a game ahead of the Chargers, but the Chargers finish with Denver and then New England and Vegas. Would you rather be Denver or would you rather be the Chargers right now? I think I'd rather be the Chargers.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, you know, I'm always stunned with the level of talent that the Chargers have that they can struggle so much, but I'd much rather play those two teams than what the Broncos are going to have to face. And I think you've also got a more experienced quarterback. When you talk about December football, you know, it kind of ticks up a notch. We always call it the race for the playoffs, right? And I feel like teams that are experienced play better in December, and so I think you'd have to give that hand to the Chargers as well. But if I had my choice, I'd rather be the Chargers.
We've been on here and haven't touched about the Chiefs defense at all yet, and that's a group that just forced six turnovers, held the Browns to just one big chunk play, 7 points on the day. When you look at the defense, is it sustainable? Was it a product of who they played? Is the Chiefs defense back? Did Steve Spagnuolo figure something out in the last couple weeks? What's your take on this Chiefs defense at this point?
I tell you, the Cleveland Browns just seem to step on themselves every opportunity they were given. I mean, I'm really stunned almost at some of the, you know, the decisions that they made. Some of the errors they made were so uncharacteristic. I mean, we saw the Kadarius Toney, you know, lining up off sides. And so I don't know. I want to say that, do I think it should have taken 3 years for Trent McDuffie to get an interception? No. Do I think that, you know, he's got the monkey off his back with that? Maybe. I definitely think they work on that stuff every day. And so I think some of it was the Chiefs defense, but man, an awful lot of it just seemed to be the Cleveland Browns giving the Chiefs opportunities to make plays versus the other way around. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
I think, look, they had Jerome Ford had the big 62-yard run. You take that away, and Cleveland barely clears 200 yards. And it's not like Jameis Winston has been ineffective. Now, he's turned the ball over too much, but the Chiefs made their entire offense look ineffective. So I think two things were happening. I think the turnovers, yeah, maybe you can give that to Cleveland, but even just the lack of ability to do anything. And honestly, Dan, is it just as simple as they finally had a pass rush in that game? Like, is it that much of a difference that, man, if they could just get a pass rush down the stretch, we could see the Chiefs' defense return to what it once was?
I do think that's the case. I mean, I always believe it starts at the defensive line, and I think Steve Spagnuolo says that quite a bit. So, you know, for them to be able to get. And George Karloftis was a monster, man.
Monster.
I'd love to see him play like that every week because he's got that kind of heart. you know. So I think as he increases and he becomes more, a veteran in this league, you might see more of that out of him, and that's a good thing, man. That's a really good thing. But I do feel like the defensive line played extremely well, and that was a huge, huge benefit to the secondary. And to finally, you know, kind of force those guys to cover 4 seconds, not 8 seconds, that's a big deal, right?
And just because nobody enjoys picking games based off of kicking matchups like Jacob Halbrocht, Harrison Butker comes back from injured reserve and misses that field goal. Any worry there in your part?
You know, there must have been a worry to some degree. I thought it was interesting because Coach Tobe told us earlier in the week that, you know, Butker wasn't going to kick off, that they were going to leave Justin Reed out there to do that. That, to me, tells me that they were already concerned about either the strength of his leg, the recovery. I'm not quite sure why they rushed him out there, given that, you know, Matthew Wright was AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. But I have a little bit of concern with that because, again, until he's back to looking like Harrison Butker, and that includes kicking him off through the end zone, I think there's a reason for that. And, you know, I just have to wonder why, and if that's just a matter of getting back out there and loosening the thing up, and you got to just go through a week of practice, then I guess we'll see this week. But definitely something to keep your eye on, you know. I mean, special teams has been a factor, and it seems like 75, 80, 90% of these games this season, and Harrison Butker's been a big part of that. So, you know, you don't want to go out there with anything less than your best.
Yeah, I can't imagine they rushed him back. They just wouldn't need to. Dan, we appreciate it. You guys get the Saturday game, then a Christmas Day game. It's going to be a wacky schedule for everybody on the network here. Of course, you'll hear all the games over on KNSS. Thanks for calling in. I know it's been a little different on your schedule today, but we appreciate the time, and we'll all be on ankle watch the rest of the week.
That's right. My pleasure, guys. Have a good Tuesday.
There goes Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. If you missed anything there, if you joined us late, you can, of course, always go back and listen all the time on the Odyssey app. You can download it. The show gets podcasted there. Thousands and thousands of people do that every month. We appreciate everybody who does that every month. All right, let's take a quick break when we come back. We got a call here on, and I'm glad. Ken's been trying to get us to talk NBA Cup, and we've got Brandon in here. Brandon pays far more attention to this thing than I do. Let's see, how much time have I spent watching the NBA Cup? It'd be zero, and then carrying another zero. It'd be zero. But we'll get Ken's take on it. The Thunder are involved. Of course, we know there are a lot of Thunder fans in this part of the world. And get Brandon's take. He's paying more attention to this stuff this time of year than I am. So we'll come back. We'll have that. Hang with us, Ken. We'll get your calls. The IHOP hotline is back open the rest of the way. It is brought to you by IHOP, the official breakfast partner of Xbox. Come in, try the decadent fully loaded French toast only at IHOP. We'll hit that next when we return on Sports Daily. Don't go away. On your way into work, want to keep listening to Sports Daily even after you park the car with the Odyssey app and Odyssey.com? You can. Just download the app or visit Odyssey.com. Search for KFH. Download the app today to get started. Something else you can do cool in the app is leave us voice messages. Just hit that little microphone icon and you can do that. If you can't call us live, we do have a live call right now, and it's on a topic we have spent no time on. And so Ken is going to break the seal here. Ken? Oh, it is a message. Great. Okay. So we've got a Ken message. Hey, look, that was a wacky coincidence there. So this is actually one of the messages I was just talking about through the Odyssey app. It's really cool. If you can't call us live on the IHOP hotline, you can leave us a message. Here's the message from Ken.
Game tonight in the NBA, fellas, Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Bucks in the NBA Cup final game. If you're one of those fans that doesn't watch the NBA and thinks the NBA doesn't, there's no defense in the NBA, tune in tonight and watch that game. Should be an awesome one. Have a good one.
There goes Ken. Look, Brandon, this isn't, go Thunder here. Two good teams, two teams that might be in the NBA finals. It's not that I don't care that the NBA does this cup thing. I honestly, legitimately don't understand it. So it's not aimed at me anyway, because I'm not anymore in this life and what we do now. I spend far more time and energy with college basketball than I do the NBA. It was not that way before I moved to this part of the world a decade ago. I was far more into the NBA than college basketball. So, you know, life has dictated that I appropriate my resources in different ways. I don't understand the NBA Cup. I don't get it. I'm not a soccer guy. So, like, there's nothing to really compare it to for me. So, you know, it's like if you played bowl games in the middle of the season, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know what to do. But I do know these are two good teams that are going to play hard tonight. And, you know, I'm just not – I'll lock into the NBA much later in the season. So I really don't have a lot on it. I'm glad the Thunder are in it, I guess.
Yeah, I'd be lying. You said you've watched 0 minutes of the NBA. Even I'm a huge Timberwolves fan. They have an exciting team, and I think I've watched 20 minutes of the NBA this year. I still follow along. I know you and me are playing in a hotly contested fantasy basketball matchup this week. But I wish I could watch, because, I mean, anytime you get Giannis and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander going against each other, two great defensive teams. And remember, these guys are playing for cold hard cash tonight. The winner is walking away with a good chunk of change. I think it's $1 million.
I think that's right.
I'll be in Kansas City covering the Kansas State Wildcats tonight. So the second best show on TV this evening. But no, it's gonna be fun. I'm excited to follow along.
It's just like this cup thing again. I don't want to come in and like pile on it, because it's not for me anyway. Like I think that happens a lot, right? Like you hear, like most people are probably like us this time of year. Like we're still all in on football, right? We've got the college playoffs coming. We've got the NFL and fever pitch. For us, you've got college basketball now, right in the swing of things. I just don't have time for it. But my thoughts on the NBA Cup aren't really that relevant. I want to know what, like, diehard NBA people think of it, right? Like what people who watch the season, don't miss a game, you know, whatever it is, this interruption of the regular season. That's who I would want to hear from. But I just don't think there are that many people out there, especially not in non-NBA cities. And I know Oklahoma City's right down the road, but like, unless you're like caught up in it regularly, it almost feels like you just kind of take a break. We all look at it. They play on goofy looking courts. Don't really understand what's happening. You and I are trying to set fantasy basketball lineups because we're in this insane league where, you know, whatever, it all combines it. And I don't even know. I'm like, who's playing? Like, I don't even know who's playing right now. So go Thunder. I there you go, Ken. I'm with you. I'm glad that they're bringing you the enjoyment here with this NBA Cup. Most of us don't know what it is, if we're being honest, and I don't have any shame in saying that, because I 100% think it's true. I think it's true for sure. Speaking of other sports not in the news, I'm just seeing this morning. Major League Baseball is not shying away from rule changes. They did a big old set of them, and it has been wildly successful for them. Rob Manfred comes out and concedes that inning requirements for starters aren't going to solve injury issues. And none of these things are things that are going to go out. There's kind of like the golden bat thing. I think he's just like throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall. But they're talking about, it sounds like, some roster changing where they could, you know, get guys, call an extra player up. They're trying to keep pitchers from being hurt. And I don't think looking at that is the wrong thing to do, Brad. I think what you do with starters is important, because they are getting hurt. The Tommy John bug is not going away.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen why not take any step toward just, yeah, prolonging these guys' careers, making sure that they get a chance to stay as healthy as long as possible. We saw the NFL just do this with the emergency quarterback rule that was on trial last year, and then now they still have I still don't even know what the rule is regarding the third quarterback. Are they a member of Yeah. It's a whole weird situation. But, I mean, the MLB, if they are going to continue to look towards possible rule changes, especially if it benefits pitchers, not them executing in-game, but just keeping them healthy long in the season, that we play fantasy baseball as well. It's hard to know when these guys are going to get scratched or whatnot. I'm all for it.
Yeah, and look, Manfred wants to make starters pitch a certain length into a game, which I do think could be wild. I'm generally okay with most of these ideas. I don't think that one has enough of a payoff to make a fundamental change like that. Because, you know, and I don't know all the intricacies of it, but you don't want to see somebody get shelled for that long. I'd like to see starters pitch deeper into a game too. I think it makes the game better. But that one fundamentally changes the way baseball's played right now. And the shift did to some degree, but you're not playing it any different. Making a starter go six innings does, to me, more so change. And there's the injury risk factor. I don't think this one will ever happen. But as far as, you know, I was a proponent, by the way, of all of the last rule changes. I didn't like the shift. I thought it was killing the game. I didn't like that relievers were coming in to pitch to one batter. I thought it was killing the game. I love the pitch clock. I love the bigger bases, introducing the steal. I love all of those things. And it's why when I hear things like golden bat, and it's like that would change the game, I'm like, you know what? I don't love it, but I also don't hate it. And I think the good thing for baseball is they can always test this stuff in the minor leagues.
Exactly.
Go to one of the leagues and test it. See what it does. See how it's received. I can tell you this, and this is what I said about this rule change. I can tell you this with certainty. If you are a fan watching a game, whether it's on television or in the stands, that experience would enhance your viewing experience. I don't care what you say. I don't care. We can sit here and say it changes the game, and it does, but you cannot convince me that if the Royals had, if they were, you know, down two, got their first two on and could pull Bobby Witt Jr. up whenever they wanted, that would not make you more excited as a fan. Because I think we'd all be lying if we didn't admit that. Whether it's needed or not is a different discussion. But it would make the end of games more exciting. I don't think there's any question about that. So therefore, like, okay, like send it down to the minor leagues and let's see what happens.
Yeah, that whole rule change is fascinating. I hate it just on the surface because it just feels like you're entering a cheat code on a video game. And yeah, sure, this guy gets a free. But then I think that would be one where when it is implemented and yeah, you see it in action for the first time, I mean, it's going
to get excited.
It would be electric. Would I rather see Kyle Isbell or Bobby Witt Jr. up down two with the bases loaded and two outs in the seventh inning of a big game in September? I mean, that's electric. The pitching one, there is still strategy to some of these teams, especially like these smaller market teams where they don't have the pitching depth, where they want to use a starter and go one inning. And then, I mean, there is strategy to all of this. So I don't agree with that one as much. The golden at bat thing, yeah, it just sounds absolutely ridiculous, but it sounds electric as well. Sign me up.
But you know, and again, I'd want to see it first. But I just, anytime that I go to, that's crazy, it would change the game too much, I hate it, I have to stop myself and say, okay, hang on a second here. What do you think basketball fans and NBA fans thought when they said, you know what, let's draw a line out on the court and anything behind that line is worth 3 points? You want to talk about changing a game. And is there anybody in the world who doesn't think the 3-point shot made basketball better? Right? So other sports forever have changed their rules to make the game more exciting for the fan since the beginning of time. Baseball has always been the most resistant to that. And now finally they aren't. And I do not think it's a coincidence that we have seen massive growth in television ratings, in attendance, and all the things that have been happening in a positive way for baseball. Like, you either adapt or you die, right? And so what matters to very old school baseball fans is not what's going to take you into the future and keep you relevant. So at some point you just kind of have to be like, sorry guys, like we just got to do it, right? Just like the 3-point shot. And maybe they'll make a 4-point shot and we'll all go, ah, you can't do that. You can't make a 4-point shot. Yeah. or adding college playoff football playoff teams, and you know, and no, you can't do that. It'll take away from the regular season, or it won't, and it'll actually make the regular season better. Did it make conference championship games better? Probably not, but it made the regular season a lot better. Just don't be so afraid of change. It, but just open mind. Baseball can test this in the minor leagues. We're going to have balls and strikes, robot umpires. That's all coming. They can test it, and it'll all make the game better. I don't know if the Golden Bat will make the game better, by the way, but I'm at least willing to entertain the idea of it. Rick says, by the way, speaking of those pitcher injuries, it's because they're throwing 100 miles an hour. Some of these older guys pitch deep into a game. You use Maddux and Glavine as an example. I'll use Randy Johnson and Nolan Ryan as an example where I don't think it's quite that simple. I do think that has an impact. There's no question. More guys do it, and the spin rates higher now than they ever have been. That's what, you know, a lot of medical people think is leading to the Tommy Johns. There have been guys throwing 100 miles an hour deep into games for a long time, but it's these spin rates, you know, that, and what are you supposed to do, right? You want the nastiest stuff you can throw. I don't think there is an easy answer to that. Like there, that's just something that's going to have to be dealt with. All right. So that popped up. I did want to get to that one real quick before we let go of baseball, Brandon. We're starting to see a lot of movement among free agents, right? A lot of moves being made. The Royals kind of made the early move with Jonathan India. How much more do you think they're going to do at the deadline here? I think that there is a small amount of pressure now to replace Singer, to have some reinforcements there. I do think they need another starting pitcher. I do think they solved a leadoff hitter, at least on paper. I do think they could still use another bat, too. I don't think their work is done, and it feels like they've got chips in the middle of the table here, and they probably are going to go spend a little more money. If they can only do one thing, though, what would you like to see them do?
I would like to see them go out and get a big lefty bat that they can deploy at any point. We've seen the injuries of Vinny, and I think they just need another solid lefty bats, whether that's guy who can get on base, whether that's a guy who can hit for power, they just need more of that. And you said deadline. Is there a deadline in baseball? No one does free agency worse than baseball. Juan Soto got announced during Sunday Night Football. That's a whole nother conversation.
Shouldn't have done that.
I mean, the Royals, the offense let them down late in the season. Just acquire as many bats as you can and avoid that late season collapse.
See, I'd go the opposite way. Right now, to me, the priority has to be to replace Singer in the rotation. The whole reason I wouldn't say I'm skeptical of the Singer trade. I don't mind the idea of it, but I'm a lot more happy about it if they replace Singer in the rotation. What I don't think the Royals can do is take this massive strength they had a year ago, this thing that propelled them back to the postseason, which was the depth and the strength of its starting pitching, take away from that and not replace it. Let me put it this way. Brady Singer had, I believe, a higher WAR than Jonathan India for a reason, right? Like you can't have questions there because that is what ultimately still should now with Waka coming back and basically the whole staff coming back. That's what should still be the strength of the team. Don't let it become a detriment. Will they be as fortunate with health in the rotation as they were a year ago? Unlikely, right? They need a little depth. I'd love to see that. I don't think Lorenzen's signed anywhere, has he?
No, not yet.
I would love to see them bring Lorenzen back. They say they want to try Bubic in the rotation. That means you lose one of the real critical pieces of your bullpen if you do that, though. So I actually think they need to attack pitching right now. I think bats are there far more often and plentiful for what they need out of a bat by the end of this thing. And they'll be able to, you know, I don't want to call it a scrap heap. That's probably not fair, but there'll be more options there. If they're going to get a pitcher, they need to get aggressive and go make sure they get a pitcher, because I do think that the hole left in the rotation by Singer is a significant thing that the team will need to address. Maybe they get replacement value through Daniel Lynch, or maybe. We've been waiting on those guys to be starting pitchers for a very long time. And
Kyle Wright is coming back from injury, a guy they signed last offseason. They're optimistic about him, but that will remain to be seen.
and he hadn't pitched in, you know, 2 years. Yeah. So, like, I think that's leaving too much up to chance. Let's get some reinforcements in there one way or the other. And if you are going to use all these guys and these bullpen guys and try to, okay, then go get somebody in the bullpen, right? Don't take away from that either, because that throughout the year, that was the biggest issue last year. All right. So we'll keep watching the baseball trade deadline. It has cooled a little bit since the winter meetings are over. There will be some other splashy players signed that the Royals will not be involved in. And then we'll probably see the trickle down and their real work can begin. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversations here on a Tuesday. Don't forget, you got college basketball coming tonight, both the Shockers and K-State playing. Looking forward to both of those games for a lot of different reasons, quite frankly. But we'll get into all of it as we make our way through. Last full segment coming. It's Albrock. It's Zenner. Chad Chambers producing. We'll be right back.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Brandon Zenner with you on this Tuesday. Something we were kicking around the sports office at KWCH yesterday, and I've been thinking about this a lot, not because it's a hot topic or, you know, trendy. It's just like watching Travis Kelce now, I am beginning to wonder if this is it for him. I think physically, the last two seasons, you've seen him age a little bit as far as like sports aging. I am honestly, it makes me even more impressed with what he's still able to do, Brandon, to at least to the eyes see that he doesn't move the same way he used to move and all of these things. Like, he's hit the place where most older players hit, yet he's still so effective. But it does make me continue to wonder, like, is this it for Travis Kelce? I'm beginning to think there's a pretty good chance it is.
Yeah, he clearly doesn't have the same step as he did. He's still really good after the catch. He can obviously still carve up a defense as good as just about anybody out there. But it's evident how much the Chiefs have got Noah Gray involved. You can see flashes of Travis in Noah a little bit, just with how he's sure. able to find space and whatnot. Kelce does seem like he has just a little less patience on the field. I don't know about you. You can see a little bit more frustration, annoyance.
Yeah,
just
that goes. I think that goes back to last year. You know, I think it's, you know what it reminds me of is Jason Witten. You know, late in his career, because Jason Witten played like forever, right? And late in his career, he just kept it going without any explosive. It was like all brains for Witten down the stretch there. He always found holes in the defense, and he always was the safety net for whoever was the Cowboys quarterback. And Kelce is not to that level yet. Kelsey's still got a whole lot more left in the tank than Witten did by the time he finally decided to step away. But it does remind me that a little bit, and I mean that as a compliment. Like, the ability to, even when you're physically not where you once were, because the only other time we really see this is at quarterback. Right. Like, that's the only other time in football where your athleticism can leave you, but you still be wildly effective. Quarterback is the only place on the field I can remember that being a factor, like that being possible, except for a couple of guys and like Witten or Kelce or Tony Gonzalez back in the day, like guys that have been able to stretch it out and just be exactly what the offense needs, exactly when it needs it. And it blows me away, honestly, that they're able to do that when it does appear to the eye that physically they don't have what they once did.
Yeah, and in the Kelce debate, or not debate, just discussion, what more does he have to give to the game? He's sure. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He could be the greatest tight end of all time, one of the best pass catchers yep. of all time. He is on the brink of possibly winning a fourth Super Bowl. Would be, if they get it done, it'll be the three-peat. He has so much going on outside of football. Obviously, other ventures and interests, just even away from his dating with Taylor Swift. I mean, from Hollywood to a wildly successful podcast. How much more does he want to balance everything? What more does he have to give Those are going to be questions that are raised over the next 2 months.
Yeah, and
look,
if he wants to play forever, you let him play forever because he's still effective, right? And so that happens too sometimes. Like, what more do you have to give? What more did Tom Brady have to give? And he decided to go play in Tampa and win another Super Bowl, right? Sometimes you just don't want to step away. And I'm totally fine with that. If that's what, I mean, there aren't very many people who have loved football as much as Travis Kelce loves football. I think, though, you know, he at some point, like it's just it's wild to imagine still being able to do it at the level he's doing it at with the physical limitations that come with age. And he has been, and it's been crazy to watch this year. Like, I'm amazed by it. Not like, oh, he's losing his I'm just like, how is he still able to do this when he so clearly is not the same athlete he was a couple of years ago? That's how I take it. Just wild that he can still do it. And quite frankly, I hope he plays forever. He's one of the, you know, he's one of the great players all time to watch, one of the great characters of the NFL right now. We were talking about that yesterday. I wanted to squeeze that in here before we let everybody go. All right, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. We'll tell you exactly how you can listen to the college basketball tonight and put a bow on this Tuesday. It's Albrecht and Zinner, Jad Chambers producing, and we'll be right back.